From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Today's show is all about surprises, and the first one is my guest. He's back. My old friend Ken Drews, laughing in the background, is here after too many months of absence, and our subject is the surprises our gardens have offered so far this spring, from extra bountiful roses to not so welcome spongy moth caterpillars, aka gypsy moths. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbooks, Small Gift Books, illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now. Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
You all know Ken Drews, author of 20 garden books, keen propagator and plant collector. And for much of the last year, he's also been my colleague in our online virtual garden club, the latest semester of which just ended. So I've been getting to talk to him all the time, but you haven't heard from him in a bit, which is something we'll correct today. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. I haven't spoken to you in almost a day.
Yeah, 12 hours or so, right? Right. So I was thinking maybe we'll do a book giveaway with a transcript like we always used to do. We can give a copy of Away to Garden away, and I'll, with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, I'll give the info on how to enter the giveaway. But yeah, in our final class of the third semester of the Virtual Garden Club that just ended, you asked everyone a question, like all the members in the audience, a question while we were on the Zoom. You asked, what plant surprised you this year so far in the garden, for better or for worse? And I just thought that would be a fun topic to talk about because it brought up a lot of great stuff people had. We ended up derailing into talking about so many good things. Baptisia, for instance, which it is. They are surprising, aren't they? They're so beautiful.
I'm almost speechless.
About Baptisia?
No, there's too many surprises.
And you're having surprises.
Yeah, and the Baptisia are beautiful. And I remember when we could only get that blue one, but now there's a yellow one that we have and a brown one with different colors.
Yeah, like bicolor sort of like,
gosh,
fabulous.
So beautiful. Yeah. If only they lasted longer, but yeah. I say that about almost everything.
Yeah, but anyway, so people were showing us in the club, they were showing us and telling us all their great surprises, and some were not so great, and that's okay too, because that's part of the deal. So I don't know, you want to start off with on the positive or the negative surprise?
Well, I thought in where we are in the Northeast, I thought it was a very cold winter, but I think maybe since we had snow when it was cold, something happened, because everything this year that is alive, that survived, is gigantic and voluptuous and doing things they've never done before. And here in the shady garden, it's as if half the trees are gone because everything's so big, and things that never happened before are happening, really. I have a crepe myrtle that to me has always been a herbaceous perennial, and it's never flowered. This year, it's 5 feet tall. It kept all the woody growth from last year. So I might even get a flower, but.
So that's a tree in a more favorable, a warmer zone.
Well, there's also shrubby ones.
Oh, too, okay. So. Okay. So this is a shrubby crepe myrtle, but for you, it's been sort of a dieback thing.
The season wasn't long enough for it to flower. But I know we've talked about this before, and I have such a long list of wonderful things that surprised me. But the things that maybe have occupied me, if not surprised me, are the weeds.
Yeah. I think I've said to you, the word that comes to mind is epic. And not just in the garden, but driving along the roadsides where I am. I mean, during garlic mustard season, and then lately the Hesperus matronalis, the Dame's Rocket, that people think is a phlox, which is not a phlox, is an alien invader that's so pretty with all the lavender flowers. I mean, they're like, 3 feet deep, mm. 50 of them lined up deep, and the same with the garlic mustard. It was just like, as I said, epic.
Well, my nemesis this year is the glaucoma. Now, do you call that Creeping Charlie?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ground ivy or Creeping Charlie.
Right,
yeah.
Ground ivy.
Glaucoma heteracea, because then the heteracea, the adjective after the proper name means ivy. Like ivy, right? So yeah, right. Yeah.
So some of the ones that I've been pulling, and I'm pulling and pulling and pulling, and of course they creep under other things and you can't get them because they're too far into the bed. I pulled one that had leaves as big as like a scented geranium leaf or like a hothouse geranium. I mean, it was almost 3 inches across.
Yeah, it's I don't understand what's going on, and I'm definitely not feeding steroids to my plants, but I'm seeing what you're seeing too. And I had some garlic mustard I always have some because it's such a prolific seeder, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was like I didn't even recognize it because it was like above my knee. Do you know what I mean? It was so tall.
Oh, only above your knee? Only?
Yeah, I mean, it was like it was so tall because here it's usually well above my knee. Let's say thigh high. Let's say, and it was just crazy looking. And I just thought, how did you get so big and why? You know,
I've gotten almost all of those out, but the few that I missed, I pulled one, I think it was yesterday, waist high.
Oh, so yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking like sort of mid thigh, but yeah, waist high. Yeah. 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 No. Wow. It's crazy. It's really they're crazy.
And fruiting and getting ready to have its seeds. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well,
not good. Not good. Not good. So, I mean, I have more bad things I can say that were surprises, but you know, maybe we should say, maybe we should pepper in some positive in between.
I saw two snakes yesterday, different species.
Oh, so who were they?
Well, maybe one was a rat snake. I know I sent mm-hmm. you a picture and you said maybe a video. And the other one, I think, was just a garter snake, which mm-hmm. people miscall garden snakes, but they're garter snakes.
Right.
But the successes actually outweigh the losses. And a snake is neither here nor there as far as, I mean, it's always a surprise. Yeah. And you think, what am I going to do? Get the dog inside, dogs. But basically, for the most part, snakes are good unless they're like the ones you have sometimes.
Oh, well, yeah, the Eastern timber rattlers, but they're just hunting, you know, they're not doing anything, and you don't see them that often, and they're in my region, you know, they're around here. So you do come upon them from time to time, but you know, around here, other people in slightly different environments have copperheads, and those are mm-hmm. a little more where you don't notice them. I mean, a rattlesnake's a big thing, but the great thing about snakes is that, as I said, they're hunting. Is that they're like the best pest control, you know, partners. I mean, you know, they're doing, I mean, you want to get rid of slugs, you know, your garter snakes and so forth are, you know, they're doing a nice job of some of these things, of eating up some of these things, which is great. I'm not so crazy when they grab a frog.
Oh,
that's disgusting, but it's nature, so it's okay. So something positive, let's say something, but what's something that was...
Oh, well, the peonies were incredible. And uh-huh. there's one that I hadn't seen bloom before called Canary Brilliance. And when it opens up, it's a remarkable color. It's sort of the color of pantyhose.
Canary Brilliance. It's a beige.
But then it turns yellow. So that's okay. Why I guess it's called that. And okay. Years ago, there was a peony I always wanted when I was a kid, Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt, and she bloomed fantastically this year. So the peonies were great. And something I was going to say, you know what's surprising, like as if you know, Margaret, can you read my mind yet?
Yes, I can. Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of honeysuckles, and I'm a little, you know, I'm always wary of honeysuckles because of Hall's honeysuckle, which is such a thug. And
right, some of the aliens are.
It smells so great, and yeah. We used to eat the nectar. But there are plenty of honeysuckles that are not monsters. And a couple are blooming right now. One is Mandarin, which is kind of orange and gold, gorgeous flowers.
And this is a vine, not shrubby.
Uh-huh. It's vine, not shrubby, mm-hmm. vine on a trellis. Mm-hmm. And another one is called Sensations, S-C-E-N-T-S-A-T-I-O-N, like scent, yeah. As if I'd ever heard that word. And I've had it for 3 years. And the first year, I thought, this doesn't smell. And the second year, it had a few more flowers. And it's still, I couldn't hardly detect any fragrance at all. And this year, with easily 100, oh, more than 100 flowers in this incredible year, I was probably 30 feet away. And I thought, well, what is it? Are the multiflora roses blooming in the neighborhood or something? It was this very, really wonderful rose smell. And it was the honeysuckle sensation after 3 years.
And sometimes when the, I don't know if it's the humidity or what, like when the air is has a heaviness, you know, like the scent molecules or whatever can, mm-hmm. you know, hover. They can hover. Thank you. I wouldn't have thought of that word.
It also depends on the time of day too. And of course we know it's who they co-evolved with generally.
Yeah. Who they want to attract and so forth. I love the vining honeysuckles, and quite a number of them are either from Sempervirens, Alonis or Sempervirens, southeastern, I think, native species. And there's selections, I think, like, I forget which one I have, but they're really beautiful. The hummingbirds love them, you know, all that kind of good stuff. And I don't know, they just cheer me also. And you can prune them. If you don't know how to prune them, you can be brutal and they'll still come back. Mm-hmm. And do you know what I mean? They're pretty durable.
Sure.
Too. Really durable.
They have tubular flowers. They don't flare at the end. They don't have the usual, what we think of the honeysuckle shape.
Right. You know? Much more narrow and long. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's perfect for the hummingbirds. Just perfect.
Yeah. No, I definitely.
And there's semi-evergreen. And I have a yellow selection. I think it's John Clayton.
I have that one too. That's a great one. Yeah.
That is great. And this year, a couple of years ago, I ordered through the mail Kinsley's Ghost. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Lanicera Kinsley's Ghost. And it looks like eucalyptus. You know how sometimes on a honeysuckle it'll have sort of, right when it flowers, it has sort of a flat leaf that's almost circular. And it's all flat leaves and the flowers pop out of it. And it's not fragrant, but it's incredible. It's blue green leaves and it's grown for the foliage. And then recently somebody put on Instagram a photo of theirs, and it was, I think it was like 7 feet tall by 7 feet wide.
Oh.
It was on a fence, but it looked like a giant shrub. So I have to watch that. But this year it's for the first time. And when you get something in the mail that's 3 inches tall, you think, oh gosh, I'm not going to live to see this. Well, 3 years later.
Right.
Especially this year with our.
Whatever.
Nice temperature. And
whatever's
water.
Going on. Right.
I think it was water, sun, whatever. It's a remarkable year. And when it's good for the plants, weeds are plants.
Yeah. Yeah. On a more down note, since we'll go up and down, right. And the surprises, so as not to terrorize anyone. For the first time in more than 35 years here, I have formerly gypsy moths, now spongy moth caterpillars. And so last year in my area, quite nearby, the next town, 5 minutes up the road, and the northwest corner of Connecticut, which is like 15, 20 minutes from here, were inundated. And I had none still. I shouldn't say none, because I know how to identify the gypsy moth, the adult moth. And in the summertime, when I used to do moth night events and so forth, and put up the black light bulbs, the CFL black light bulbs against a white sheet out in the woods, and have people come, and we'd have an entomologist and identify moths at night. We'd always see, you know, a gypsy moth male or two or three, and but you know, not big numbers. So in other words, they're present, but their numbers don't swell except when the conditions are right. And so nearby me last year was really bad. But I didn't have any, and I was like, why? I wonder why. So this year I do, not sort of decimation level where you can hear them crunching and eating it from the trees. Because that's literally my own, 5 minutes away, all my friends. in the next town. It was like deafening. It was like, you know, constant noise of chewing. It was crazy. And defoliated trees, especially oaks and maples and so forth. Mm-hmm. So what fascinates me is the surprise, in other words, in this, not just that it was the first time in all these decades that I've had any at all, and I kind of have a light infestation, but that they, down to the last plant, they have, I found and occupied every Hamamelis, every witch hazel relative, so Corylopsis, the winter hazel, Father Gila, and Hamamelis, witch hazels, of which I have quite a number of different types in the gardens near the house. They have gone for those. Now, how is it that a pest that starts as an egg and then a tiny, you know, the tiniest caterpillar you can imagine, how do they find the plants they like the best? Do you know what I mean? Interspersed around the yard, and they find them. And that's where they're clustered. It's just weird. It's really weird.
Yeah, you think the moths lay eggs on the ones that...
Maybe that's what it, I guess, but it's just wacky. It's really wacky. I've seen wacky. That
with milkweed. I've seen different butterflies go to the milkweed, and if you ever see them lay their eggs, it's pretty funny.
Well, these guys, you usually see them sort of coming down from above, you know, they sort of drop. Anyway, they're quite repulsive. I've been squishing like mad, you know, and people are like, what can you do? And, you know, some people in late April, before the emergence, they put sticky bands around the trunks of their trees. You know, that can hurt birds.
Away.
Yeah, it's nasty. I don't know, but it works, but it's nasty because when the caterpillars crawl up the trees, they get stuck. You know, one thing you can do is spray the BT Christaki strain, but you have to do that when they're, you know, like just emerging and like a half an inch long, not when they're big, and they get big pretty fast. So you have a very short window. And since I didn't know I was going to have them, since I never have, I didn't obviously, but a lot of people are doing that. But
that's an organic, well, it's a disease.
It's a biological, right. It's a biological and a living organism. Yes. And it cripples their digestive system. So it sort of paralyzes their digestive system when they munch on a plant that has it on it. And it's caterpillar specific. So, so I didn't do anything except I'm squishing them. But it's an interesting, again, my surprise was that they just find anything related to Hamamelis. Is what they like fruit trees also, like apple trees and stuff like that. But crazy. So what's your next surprise?
It's supposed to be a good...
Well, go ahead. Go down. Let's go down the tubes, whatever.
Something's
you want.
Wrong with the bald cypress. And I have several, many, like six different, they're not different, but six Taxodium disticum, the bald cypress, sometimes called swamp bald cypress. And oddly enough, I have a Taxodium ascendens, which is the swamp cypress, and that's fine, but all of the bald cypress were defoliated. Well, they're little needles, they're deciduous conifers, and their needles hardly came out, and they still haven't come out.
Oh,
you can see through them. They're like skeletons. I haven't seen anything on it, but I thought, is that some kind of temperature thing or disease? But I'll bet there's tiny caterpillars that I can barely see. They probably look just like the needles.
Wow.
So that usually a tree can survive that once or twice or even three times. But something's wrong with some of the dogwoods.
Oh.
And I think I lost a pink one that I grew from seed from a friend's garden in Brooklyn. And it was probably about 10 years old. And last year it bloomed for the first time. And this year it didn't leaf out or anything. It was dead.
Huh.
And I think that's probably anthracnose.
Right. But
there's another cornice not too far from that that's losing limbs. And I'm thinking these guys are getting, getting diseases.
Huh. Yeah, I don't have in my garden. I have next door at my sort of office, whatever. I have one Cornus florida, the native flowering dogwood. But the ones that I tried here early on, they didn't do. They, like you said, they kind of got anthracnose or whatever back in the day. I do have some Cornus kusa here, the Korean dogwoods. And my big one, which is always a strong performer in early June, it bloomed, only like half of it bloomed this year. Hmm. So kind of wacky, but yeah, I don't have a lot of dogwoods.
Well, and I had a wolf eyes that probably
yeah
was the showstopper in the whole garden in about 3 or 4 years ago. And you told me that there was a problem with that tree. And I thought, oh no, it's so beautiful. It's big and healthy. Well, it's about a third the size now. The yeah. leaves are tiny and it's shrinking.
And that's the variegated kusa. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be its last year.
Yeah. It sounds like, yeah. I mean, some things I can't struggle with. Do you know what I mean? Some things they just don't work here. And I just learned my lesson and haven't kept trying. Do you have, speaking of surprises, do you have, you know, in these last 3-4 minutes, do you have sometimes plants showing up far away from where the so-called like parent plant is? Like, you know, you have that plant, but it's like 75 feet away or across the whole yard. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. It's funny. I wouldn't say 75 feet, but I have some Digitalis grandiflora, which is really perennial, unlike most foxgloves. And it was a little clump of about 3 or 4 stems for really over 10 years. This year, it's in about 4 places, and they all look just fine. So that's a surprise. And one place is easily 25 feet away. But
okay, so
what'd you get 75
feet? So I have a Aruncus goat's beard, the big Diwicus, the big yikes. Goat's beard. And it's, when I say big, it's like the size of a shrub, my original plant. Mm-hmm. My original plant is probably 30 years old, still in place, 6 feet across and, you know, in bloom, 5 feet tall or something like that. White, almost like giant astilbe flowers. And then a few years ago, one ended up all the way across the yard. Now it's on the way to the compost heap where it ended up. And I'm wondering if I brought a seed laden flower truss or something. You know what I mean? Maybe I did that accidentally. It ended up over there. Or I used compost and there were still some seeds in it. I don't know, because I've researched and researched and researched how does this plant move around and what wildlife is interested in it and so on and so forth.
I can't imagine.
And I just there's no information to be had in all the research. And now I have it in yet another place about 40 feet from where the original plant is. It's completely the opposite direction. So there, I just love stuff like that. And I have that, what do you call it? Sinalesis aconitifolia. Oh, yeah, I don't even know what the shredded umbrella plant, they call it. That's sort of one of those recent hits of interesting foliage kind of shade plants. And that, I had it in one spot. It didn't come up there, but like 25 feet away, it came up.
Well, that I can understand because it has a kind of puffy seed head.
Okay.
Which could be airborne, you know, could
be carried
by the wind. It's not a very pretty flower. It's Asteraceae. It's a little daisy relative. Is Aruncus rose family, do you think?
It's not a saxifrage. I don't know. I can't remember. You know, it looks like a stilbe and that kind of stuff. I don't even remember.
We'll look it up at some point.
Yeah. We'll look it up. But
talk about roses. And I've never had enough sun for roses.
And it's a great rose year.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I have a red rugosa that for years it would have like 4 flowers, maybe 5. This year it has clusters as big as a cantaloupe with 8-10 flowers in a cluster. And it's all over the whole thing. And my favorite rose, one from the 1700s that I have called Petite de Hollande, which is small flowers and unbelievably fragrant. I should have cut it back because now it's like flopping out of the bed and on these giant wands.
Huh. Who knew?
So,
It definitely is. This is a great rose year. I have some of the Canadian Explorer roses, those super hardy ones that were popular for like William Baffin, a climber, because back in the day it was thought that in my zone 5 climate I couldn't grow a lot of climbers, but William Baffin was, you know, bone hardy. And sure enough, I mean, the thing is, I've had it for decades and it just gets better and better and better. But this year it's exceptional, just covered. And like you say, the rugosas also, I have just a plain white rugosa. I've never seen so many flowers on it. So I hope that means lots of hips. So we're almost out of time, but I'm glad to have a reunion on the podcast, and we won't let it go so long. We've just both been so busy. Good. It's been a crazy
year. Get a little
year.
Of the hips on that rose.
The hips on that rose, exactly. So I hope we'll get back to our usual frequency of doing podcasts.
Sounds good. Ken. Sounds great.
Yeah, and we're going to, we'll let everybody know, you know, when we get back to Virtual Garden Club, it's going to resume in September and October. And also we're going to have a couple pop-up events where Ken and I are going to do some not open mic nights, but sort of ish.
And you're going to have a gift book giveaway too?
Exactly. So with the transcript of this show, but we'll also be on the lookout coming up soon. We'll have some announcements of some events we're going to be doing. So thanks. And I'll talk to you soon, Ken.
Okay. Martigans next time.
Okay. Martigan lilies. Okay. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com. Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbooks, small gift books illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, I hope, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and happy surprises meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.